Hello, everyone, and very, very happy Wednesday. And Sharon, it's really nice listening to you after meeting you because now I have a face to go along with the voice. That's always a lot of fun. As you know, I loved you and I loved your husband. Your husband is a wonderful, wonderful man. There's just no doubt about that. So it was a wonderful week, and I enjoyed being with everyone. I am here to teach another type of getting to the root of what's going on underneath an upset. You know, the last week we were in here at the Abbey in Colorado, and a lot of people learned the attitudinal healing process, the six-step process that Diedrich uses at Choose Again, which is a wonderful, wonderful process. It works well. I even tried it with my daughter on an upset she had Saturday morning, and it worked well. So my reason for being here and teaching a different process is not because I have any kind of a judgment against that process. My reason for teaching a different process is simply because we have a course that we teach in Awakening Together called True Discernment. And this other process was already written into that course. And right now I am certifying 5 people to teach that course. And I want to make sure that they are really, really clear on this process, that since they're going to be teaching it. And, you know, maybe even the fact that 4 out of those 5 just spent time at Choose Again creates a little bit of a challenge, because we don't want to be confused between the two processes. We want to make sure that there's great clarity on this process that they'll be teaching. I do not believe one process is better than the other. I believe there are 2 ways to the same end. So I'm just here teaching the process that is a part of our True Discernment program, because it's helpful now that at least those 5 people get very, very clear on this process. But also, I will be posting this recording on the Minister Preparation Program website for those who are going through the program. So if they want more clarity on this process, which is called Root Cause Inquiry, they can go and get additional instruction on it as well. It will be an optional audio on that website. And on top of that, I will post it on reginadonacres.com, so that anybody who wants to listen to it there can listen to it there. So really, this is for everyone. Now, Lynn is one of the people I am certifying, but this is typically Lynn's time off, Wednesdays, from 10:30 Eastern time to 12:30 Eastern time is her time off. So Lynn, I want you to go ahead and take your time off. I mean, you'll have the audio. You can play it in the room later during a quiet time. So, you know, don't feel any obligation to hang around. Go and do whatever else you need to do. My primary intention for being here on Wednesdays is to give you some time off, because I love you and everyone needs time to do other things. So please go ahead and take that time off. The process that I am going to teach today, I call Root Cause Inquiry. I am the one that named it. And this process arose in me. I didn't learn it anywhere, but I've used it extensively. If I was to give credit to where the idea came from, it came from my business life. In my business life, I used to teach a process which was much more involved and much more complicated. This is much simpler. But I used to teach a process in my business life that was developed by a Japanese man named Ishikawa, and it was called Root Cause Analysis. And whenever there was a business problem, especially if it was something that seemed to continuously go wrong in a process, for instance, a product was always late, or a product always had a weakness in it, and we didn't know what the cause of the recurring problem was, we would use this tool called Root Cause Inquiry, also known as the Fishbone Diagram, which is very complicated, and I'm not going to teach that now. But we would use that process in order to find the root cause of the recurring problem. Now, that's very, very similar to what we're doing here on the spiritual path. You know, whenever we get upset, again, as we all know, the Course says we're never upset for the reason we think. And whenever we get upset, we may think we're upset because she just said that, right? But the truth is that is not why we're upset. And the reason we continuously get upset, just like the reason a product continuously has a weakness in it, is because there is one root cause somewhere that has not been corrected. Once the root cause in the product is found and corrected, the part of the product that was always weak becomes always strong. And on the spiritual path, once the root cause is found and healed or forgiven or let go, the idea that was causing many, many upsets is no longer present. And as a result, many upsets disappear. There are many situations where once upon a time we would have become upset that now we simply aren't. So the general idea behind root cause inquiry is the same as the general idea behind root cause analysis in business. The idea is to find the cause that is generating a repeated, I'm going to call it a problem for lack of a better word now, problem. In our case, that would be an upset. So that purpose is the same. We're looking for one cause that is causing many upsets so that it can be healed. The other similarity between the fishbone diagram or the Ishikawa root cause analysis and root cause inquiry is that Ishikawa always taught that you should ask why. He would say five times. Now, to me, five times is just a symbol. But we're going to be learning how to appropriately ask why until we get to a true inner aha. And I'm going to demonstrate that. In fact, I'm going to ask right now that anything in me that is not healed, anything in me that provides the opportunity for healing, I'm going to ask that that show up for all of us in this next 2 hours so that I can practice root cause inquiry live and demonstrate exactly how it works. What I would really like to see are opportunities in me that have not been seen before, and therefore the true cause of the upset is not yet known to me. And I would like to discover the true root cause right here with everyone watching so that they get a real good feel of how this process works. Amen. Jamie wants out, so one moment. Just like with any process, there are a few guidelines about how to use the process. And if you don't use the process correctly, it probably won't work correctly. So the reason for following the guidelines is because you want to get to the true aha. So I'm going to share a few of those guidelines. Now, I've never written this down before. This is something that happens naturally in me, so again, I'm going to ask for the guidelines to be given. This is not a prepared speech. And if there's a guideline that I realize later in the 2 hours as I'm demonstrating, I will add that guideline at that time. And if anybody wants to take notes, please feel free to take notes. So, again, the purpose of what I am calling root cause inquiry is to get to the root cause of an upset. And the assumption, which is actually more than an assumption, it's a truth. The assumption is that when I get to the root cause upset, that root cause upset is actually the cause of many upsets, not just this one. So that as it is healed, several upsets in my life will then disappear. It doesn't mean the circumstances will change. It means my getting upset about those circumstances will change. And maybe the circumstances will change too. That sometimes happens. But that's not the purpose. The purpose is to get to where I can be consistently at peace and never ever upset. In fact, as I say that, the first thing that's coming to my mind right now is today's quote by Krishnamurti. So I'm just running to Facebook real fast so I can pull that up. Or real slow, depending on the computer. I've already clicked. We're waiting. Okay, so here is today's Krishnamurti quote. Achieve order within yourself, an inward tranquility which knows no disturbance at any moment in the daily life of the home and the office. That really describes the purpose of root cause inquiry. It is to achieve that order within yourself. And again, he defines that order as an inward tranquility which knows no disturbance at any moment. And then he's very clear that he's talking about in your daily life, both at the home and the office, and of course it would be anywhere else. So this is an inward tranquility that does not need to avoid anything. This is an inward tranquility that does not need to avoid anything. And in fact, yes, I believe I am taping this, Sharon, but let me double check. Yes, I am, so you can listen to the recording later. In fact, this inward tranquility, even though he uses the word achieve, it isn't truly something that we're achieving, because this inward tranquility already exists. It's just that when you add the false beliefs, the false ideas on top of it, they then create something else, some type of upset. And the upset covers the tranquility. But the tranquility is always present. You know, just like the blue sky is always present, even when there's a hurricane, a tornado, a blizzard, you know, all types of storms, a thunderstorm. You know, if you go beyond the clouds, the blue sky, the peacefulness of the sky is actually completely untouched. It remains tranquil. It is always tranquil. Well, the same thing is true here. That tranquility exists. So we aren't really achieving the tranquility so much, as what we're doing is we're uncovering the cause of the different types of storms that we experience, or the different types of upsets that we experience. And we're letting that cause or those causes be healed. And when we do, then the storms go away and the tranquility is revealed. But again, it is a tranquility that is perfect. And by perfect, I mean it's not dependent on circumstances. I don't need the house to be quiet for me to be tranquil. I don't need my space to be tranquil. I don't need all of my friends around me to be tranquil. I don't need anything to go, quote, my way to be tranquil. The tranquility is because I let go of the cause of every possible upset. And Jamie wants in, so one moment. Okay, I'm back. All right, so the guidelines. The first guideline for root cause inquiry is that in the beginning, it's probably helpful to do it as a journaling practice, writing it down. And that is until you become very, very skilled with it. Once you become very, very skilled with it, you'll notice it starts to happen in your mind automatically and very quickly. And, you know, you go to the root cause and you see the answer very fast. And at that point, you know, to journal is just kind of a waste of time. It's not necessary. But in the beginning, it is very, very helpful to journal because the mind will try to distract you away from the process, take you off back into the story, and you won't get the desired result. So in the beginning, and possibly for years, I think I journaled from 2004 through 2010. I haven't journaled since 2010, but that doesn't mean I don't still do root cause inquiry. But you can tell that I journaled a lot of years before it really became pretty automatic. And if anything ever came up that I couldn't get to just by looking at it in my mind, I would go back to journaling today. But once it does get to where you can just look at it in your mind, you know, journaling is no longer necessary. But in the beginning, I recommend doing this, either, you know, writing it down or typing it up, so that you can really follow where you're going in the inquiry process. And if the mind distracts you, you've written down where you've been, so you can go back, find where you got off track, and continue from there. So that's the first guideline. Do this as a journaling process. The second guideline is you use root cause inquiry when there is an upset. Again, I've asked today for some unhealed upsets in me to come back, because right this moment I'm not upset about anything, but I'm asking for them to come back, anything that has not been fully healed, to come back so that I can use it for this demonstration. But typically when a person sits down to do root cause inquiry, it's because they know there is an upset. And it can be any kind of upset at all. It can be something that feels extremely mild or extremely, extremely strong. Like a great, great fear. The only thing is when it's extremely strong, you may not be able to do root cause inquiry in that moment. Sometimes when the emotions are extremely strong, they almost seem to take over our mind to the point that we can't find our true logical mind or our true right mind. And our true logical mind, our true right mind, is definitely going to be used in this process. So if we're in a state where we cannot find our true logical mind, our true right mind, what I recommend during that period of time is practicing rest, accept, and trust until the upset passes enough that it's not also all-consuming. But when it passes enough that it's not so all-consuming, I recommend going to the inquiry. So what we aren't doing is just resting, accepting, and trusting, letting an emotion pass, and then saying, oh, thank God, I feel better now. Because if we haven't seen the root cause for the upset in the first place, it's gonna come back. So when it does pass, and every extreme emotion passes, no extreme emotion stays forever, when it does pass, we still want to go back and look at it and do the root cause inquiry. If the emotion is not extreme, if it's, you know, mild or medium, you can do the root cause inquiry while the emotion is present and it will work perfectly. It's only in the extreme conditions you may find you can't do it at all. You don't have enough sanity to do it. So just wait until that passes, that stage passes, and then do it when you are not wholly insane. You need to be able to access your sanity. But again, the root cause inquiry process does start with an upset. And that upset could be any type of emotional upset at all. You could feel sad, depressed, angry. You could feel like you're hating, or you could feel hateful yourself. You could feel guilt. You could feel blame, like you're really blaming someone. You could feel that a situation is very, very unfair, that feeling of unfairness in you. You could feel like a victim. You could feel like a victimizer, like you've really, you know, you've just manipulated someone, or you've been mean to someone, or, you know, you have abused someone in some way. You know, there's just a whole range of emotions that you can start with. Just anything, anything at all. That is not, you know, perfect peace, joy, acceptance, love, right? You start with that. And again, it could be mild. And in fact, yesterday I had a very, very mild upset, so mild that if I wasn't paying attention to myself, I wouldn't even have seen it. But I had a very, very mild upset yesterday, and we'll start with that one today, and we'll look and see what the cause of that was. after I go through the guidelines as I remember them. Now, the first question typically is, you know, generally, why am I experiencing this upset? Although, when I ask the question, I don't ask the general question, I ask a specific question. But again, the guideline is, you know, a general question because the upset will be different each time. So the guideline is, why am I experiencing this upset? So if I am experiencing anxiousness, I would ask, why am I feeling anxious? If I am experiencing a strong grievance against someone, you know, just this, you know, this strong, strong grievance, I would ask, why am I experiencing this grievance? If I am experiencing a sense of unworthiness, I would ask, why do I feel unworthy? So the very first question starts with the emotion, which does mean I do need to tune into the upset first. I need to tune into the emotion. So if I really don't know, some people are not super in touch with their emotions. So if I really don't know my emotion, I might even need to start with a question prior to the first question. And that first question might be, how am I feeling? Or how does this make me feel? Something like that, right? So you want to get in touch with how you're feeling. And then you want to ask, why do I feel this way? Now, typically, and this is a normal part of the process, so please do not avoid this. Typically, the very first answer is a repeat of the story. So if I feel upset because I heard you were talking about me behind my back, let's use that story. I feel upset. I know I'm upset because you were talking about me behind my back. And so first, maybe the first thing I need to do is, what kind of an upset is this? I need something specific, not general. So the first thing I might need to ask is, how do I really feel, you know, that person was talking about me behind my back? And I might say anger. I feel angry. I'm really angry that he or she did that. Okay, now I am ready to start with the first question. Why does that make me feel angry? Or why am I angry? And typically when I ask, why am I angry, the first answer that comes up is the surface answer, because she or he was talking about me behind my back. And that is perfectly normal. You know, that's exactly what you believe. You believe you're upset because of the situation. And so the situation is the first answer to the question. Do not avoid that. If you avoid that, you're actually avoiding your first level of belief. Your first level of belief is that you're upset because of the story, because of what's happening in the world. And you don't want to deny your first level of belief, not if we're going to do this process in an entirely honest way. So when you ask, why am I angry? And the answer comes, because he or she was talking about me, you write that down in your journal. That's your first level of belief. That's what you believe. But once the story comes out, we don't want to stay stuck in the story. If you then go off on a long paragraph of all the nice things you do for this person and how this person should appreciate you and blah, 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 you are leaving the questioning process and getting into the story. So even though you may get a very brief answer about the story, and that is completely acceptable because that is your first level of belief, you do not want to run off on the story. One sentence, that's enough. This is what I believe. I believe I'm angry because he or she was talking bad about me. That's all you need. You don't need anything else. Don't go into the story. You've captured your first level of belief. Once you've captured your first level of belief, you have to bring an assumption into the process in order for the process to work. The assumption is, if my mind was perfectly healed, nothing would upset me, not even this. Therefore, I'm not really upset because of this story. because he or she was talking bad about me. There's something else that I am not yet aware of. That's the assumption. So you do put the brief version of the story down. You recognize that's what I believe, but you also immediately recognize that is not true with this assumption. And again, the assumption that you must be willing to adopt is, if I had a perfectly healed mind, nothing would upset me. In other words, you're really accepting what Krishnamurti is saying. You are really accepting that there is an inward tranquility which knows no disturbance at any moment. Therefore, there has to be something here that's causing a disturbance, something other than the story, and you want to find what that something is. So again, you ask the question. The general question is, why am I upset? In my sample, the specific question is, why am I angry? The story comes out because that person is talking bad about me behind my back. And then immediately the assumption. The assumption is, if I had a healed mind, that would not bother me. Once the assumption is given, you then ask, so, why does that bother me? Why does it bother me that that person was talking bad about me? And when you ask this question, one thing you want to pay attention to is that you're not jumping up into the head. You don't want to jump up into your thinking mind. You do not want to jump up into your metaphysical learning mind. Like some people might jump into the conclusion right away, well, if I'm upset because she's talking about me, it must mean I talk about others. I don't want you doing anything in the head. Nothing. I want you to realize that you don't know why you're upset. If you knew why you're upset, you probably wouldn't even have become upset. You would have seen it too quickly. You don't know why you're upset. And you're going downward through the heart, through the emotion, through the feeling, through the wisdom, through all of that together. You're going downward within to find the true cause of the upset. So again, the assumption is that if I had a perfectly healed mind, nothing would upset me, not even this story. So then the question becomes, why does this upset me? What's the real reason? Why does it upset me? Why can't I, or you could ask, why can't I be happy with her talking about me? Why can't I be perfectly at peace with him talking about me? Right? That type of a question. Or you could ask, but why does that upset me? They're all the same question. And then when I look within, what I might get an answer in words, or I might get in touch with another feeling. I might get in touch with the feeling, for example, that I feel unworthy. And I might see, when I see that feeling, I might see that I don't like people talking about me, because I believe that whenever, if anyone is talking about me at all, that does mean something's wrong with me. And when I see that within myself, you know, after closing my eyes and looking, that's what I write down. Because I believe that if someone else is talking about me, that means something is wrong with me. Now, if I have a fully healed mind, even though I see that the personality is not perfect, that the personality has flaws, that the personality makes mistakes, if I have a fully healed mind, that does not bother me. I need to keep this assumption. That does not bother me, that the personality, you know, makes mistakes, right? So I need to look at this belief. I believe that if people are talking about me, that means something is wrong with me. And I need to ask again, why does that upset me? Why can't I be perfectly happy with the fact that the personality has flaws, that the personality makes mistakes. Why do I believe the personality has to be perfect? Why does that upset me? I need to look. And if I look underneath that, probably what I'm going to find is that I believe I am inherently bad, even underneath the personality. There's whatever I am. Whatever I am is bad. It's really bad. It's inherently bad. And when I get down to seeing that I believe the truth about what I am is that I'm bad, I will have a sense of, that's it. Or a sense of, aha. A sense of, that's the problem here. That's the root cause. So you see, if I look back at the story, then I'll see the story is actually weak. It's flimsy. It's like the veil of the illusion. You know, like, I'll look back up at the story where I wrote down on the first level of belief, I'm upset because she's talking about me, and now I'm not going to believe that anymore. And the reason I don't believe that anymore is because now I found the real reason I'm upset. And that's how you can tell you got to the real reason, is when you look back up at your first level of belief, you don't believe that anymore. That's not why you were upset, and you know it. You weren't upset because she was talking about you or he was talking about you. You're upset because you really do believe that you are bad, and this event triggered that belief. And it's very, 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 very helpful, although sometimes absolutely no fun, to see this. What do you do once you see it? At some level, you want to realize that is just a belief. And it's the cause of your upset. You know, one of the things I used to do, because it was such a strong belief, was I used to look at it and say, yes, it's true. I believe that. But I am willing to see differently. That's what I did with it. If you're a Byron Katie student, if you really love the Byron Katie process, you might start asking some of the questions from the work, like, am I absolutely certain that is true? Am I fully certain that is true under all circumstances? You know, you may somehow question it. What you do with it once you discover it, if you're a Ramana Maharshi student, you might ask, who is the I that believes I'm bad, right? I was a Course in Miracles student when I started this process, so I gave my willingness to see differently. So what you do with it when you find it may just depend on what resonates with you, but what you do is something other than say, ah, that's true, I'm bad. Right? If you say, ah, that's true, I'm bad, you're only reinforcing it. Some level in you, you want to use your right mind, you want to use your wisdom to look at that root cause once you find it and see, to at least some degree, that's a mistake, that's not true, or at least that's only something I believe. And when you do that, you are taking away giving it 100% of your belief. And when you take away giving it 100% of your belief, you are opening up for it to be undone. If it's a really deeply held belief, like the belief I am bad, chances are you're going to journal down to it many, many times. And you're going to give your willingness many times, or you're going to use the Byron Katie inquiry or the self inquiry many times before it has no power at all. That's okay. I mean, how many times have you believed it? In fact, you've been going around believing it underneath upsets and not even realizing you were believing it. You were thinking that you were upset because she was talking about you, when really what was happening underneath was there was this unconscious little voice saying, I'm bad, I'm bad, I'm bad, I'm bad, I'm bad, I'm bad. And that's what you were really believing. So you've been believing it somewhat consciously, but you've also been believing it many, many, many times unconsciously without even realizing you were believing it. You were believing you were upset for other reasons. So that, you know, you've no telling how many thousands or millions of times you've believed this belief. So you may have to drill down into it and honestly see it under several circumstances before it starts to weaken. And that's okay. And in fact, that particular belief, I am bad, or some form of it, I am unlovable, you know, I am not worthy, or I am unworthy, you know, some form of that idea, I am guilty, may show up underneath many, many, many of your upsets. But do not make the mistake of believing that's always going to be the root cause. It's under a lot of them. I don't know how many. You know, I can't tell you the percentage. So you are going to see it over and over again. But if you make the mistake of believing that's the only false belief you have, something else is going to start to happen in your journaling. You're going to start forcing your way to the answer to what you think is the correct answer. I am bad is the correct answer. And you're not going to be honest in your looking. So whenever you start this root cause inquiry process, you also have to start with the assumption that you don't know what the root cause is. And you don't want to force your answers to go in the direction you think it's supposed to go in, like I'm supposed to end at, I am bad. Because that is not always the answer. And in fact, let me give you another example from my past to show how that is not always the answer. And there are some other false beliefs that need to be seen as well. There was a time when I was very annoyed. Annoyed was the feeling. And I seemed to be annoyed because Laurent and another woman were at my house and they were engaged in a conversation about New Age ideas. And I don't remember now what all the ideas were. But all these New Age ideas, you know, maybe purple flames, divine feminine, the magic of crystals, you know, all this stuff. And I was getting very, very annoyed at their agreement and their discussion of these concepts and these ideas and how much they were reinforcing each other that those were true ideas. And I was annoyed. And in fact, at first, I didn't do anything about it. Often, an upset starts very mild, and if we would inquire into it right then, that would be wonderful. But often, we don't. And so because we don't, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's what happened in this case. It got very, very big. And once it got big, it actually got so big that I couldn't inquire into it. Remember I said when it gets extreme, you go into extreme insanity? And you have no sanity at all with which to inquire, that's what happened in this case. I became so extremely annoyed and angry, and I hated them, right? I hated them that I was so insane I could not inquire. So the first thing I had to do was move into the rest, accept, and trust process. I had to just be with this. I had to rest my mind so that I wasn't listening to the hate thoughts in my mind, the story in my mind. I had to rest my mind, and I had to remind myself that this will pass. I remember it got so dark that I literally thought I would never hear spirit again, never see sanity again, never feel willingness again. It got very, very big and very, very dark. And so I had to trust that the darkness would pass and I would feel willingness again. That the darkness would pass and I would be able to hear spirit again. I would be able to see into this. And I just had to wait And in that particular case, if you've heard this story before, you know it. I waited for about a week. This was a big, big ego storm. But all extreme emotions pass. And at some point, it began to fade. And then I was able to, what I call, set down with spirit, but set down into the inquiry and look at it once it began to get weaker. And so again, the initial emotion was annoyance, but it turned into hate. And so by the time the inquiry began, the question was, why did I hate them? If I had started in the beginning, the question would have been, why do I feel annoyed? But because it got so big, the question became, why did I hate them? And the answer was something like, because they were believing all of that New Age crap that isn't true. It does sound like somebody's trying to get into my house. Jamie hears it too. But it might just be Ivan, her boyfriend, the dog. He tries to get in the house sometimes. But if I have to leave because somebody came to my house, I'll let you know. So the very first answer was the story, the first level of belief. The first level of belief was because they're believing all of this New Age crap that isn't true, right? That was my belief of why I was upset. Now again, I have to go into the assumption that if I had a perfectly healed mind, this would not upset me. So then I have to ask the question, but why does this upset me? Why does it upset me that they're agreeing on some New Age ideas that I don't believe in? And the next answer became, I'm scared. And I could tell immediately I was getting somewhere. And so then I had to ask, what am I scared of? Or if I want to stay with the whys, because some people like rules and they want to stay with the whys, because this is a why drilling down, then the question would be, why does this scare me? They're really both the same question. What am I scared of? Or why does this scare me? And the next answer that came was because I am afraid that the truth is not true. In other words, I am afraid that everything I've been learning from A Course in Miracles, everything that I wrote as the scribe of NTI, I'm afraid that's crap. I'm afraid that the truth is not true. And when I saw that, I felt that. That was a very core fear. And again, I know I hit the aha. I know I hit the root cause, the root belief, the root cause of this upset. Because when I look back at the original story that I had written down just two lines above, you know, that I hate them because they're talking about all this New Age crap, I now realize that's not at all why I hated them. That has nothing to do with why I was hating them all week. I hated them because I'm afraid that the truth is not true. I'm afraid that I'm believing a lie, that I'm wishing for a lie, that I'm betting my whole life, right? Because by this time I'd left my job, you know, I'm betting my whole life on a lie, and that scares me. Now what do I do with that? Well, again, because of my spiritual teaching that I had learned up until that point from the Course and from NTI, I give my willingness to see that I'm wrong. I pray to Holy Spirit to help me see that I'm wrong. I am willing to see that the truth is true, right? But if I was a Byron Katie student, maybe I would do the work on that thought. If I'm a Ramana Maharshi student, maybe I would ask, Who is it that thinks the truth is not true? Who is it that believes? You know, what I do with that thought, the specifics of the process at that point can vary based on who's doing the process and what you find helpful. But what's most important is I do not give 100% of my belief to that thought again. I do not go, oh, that's it. That's what's wrong. The truth isn't true. Right? If I go into that, I'm just re-believing it. I don't, oh, that's true. That's it. I have to, in some way, in whatever way feels natural to my heart, natural to my faith, not give it my full belief. But now I'm aware. And again, as you drill down into your upsets and you start to find the real cause of your upsets, you're going to find that, you know, you may have 1,000 things that upset you. You might have 3, 4, 5 root causes going on. And so it is true that as you drill down, you're going to keep getting to these same root causes over and over. But that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Because every time you look at them and don't give them your full belief, you're beginning to undo them. So, I'm going to put on my glasses. I can't see what people are typing because I've been talking without my glasses. Yeah, the truth is always operating truly. And so just your looking and not giving it your full belief is shining some light on it, and the belief is beginning to be undone. Before, remember, when I'm thinking that I'm upset, you know, that I hate Laurent and this other woman because they're talking about New Age, if I just walked off and believed that, if I just walked off and believed, you know, I hate them because this is what they're doing, I am not looking at the root cause. I'm not letting awareness shine on the root cause, and I'm not giving myself the opportunity for healing. But when I do that drill down process, and I look at it and I go, ah, that's it. And again, I know it's it because I can test it. I can look back up at the story and say, yeah, that's not why I was upset. Right? I can even test that I'm really there. Yeah, that's not why I was upset. This is why I was upset. This is the real reason. Then looking at it and then either inquiring into it or giving my willingness to see differently something, I'm allowing light to shine it away. Whenever you believe the first level of belief, you're holding on to the root cause and continually reinforcing it and believing it. When you go below the first level of belief and get all the way down to the root cause and see it and go, aha, that's why I was upset, then you're giving it the opportunity to heal. You're shining healing light on it. So it is important to go down and see the root cause, whether you do it through the choose again process or whether you do it through this root cause inquiry process that I'm teaching. That isn't as important. What's important is that you get to it, that you get to the true belief underneath. That's what's important. When you believe the story, when you believe I'm upset because of what they did or because this is happening in the world or whatever your story is, without knowing it, you're reinforcing a false belief. This is why I have said a million times, do not blame anyone or anything for your upset. Because when you blame anyone or anything, the real reason you're upset stays hidden. It stays in the dark. No healing energy is looking at it. And you certainly don't serve yourself in that way. So when you blame someone or something for your upset, you are missing an opportunity. Now, don't worry, more opportunities will come. They will keep coming as long as those beliefs are still hidden in the darkness. The upsets will keep happening and the opportunities will keep coming. But if you can train yourself In fact, I had this rule. This is how I trained myself. I had a rule, and maybe we should add this to the guidelines. If you took notes on the guidelines, you could add this at the top of the guidelines. This is an assumption you start with. The assumption that you start with is, if I am upset, it's because of a belief in my mind. Always true, no matter what. If I am upset, it's because of a belief in my mind. Right? That assumption needs to be there as well. It's really the flip side of, if my mind was perfectly healed, this would not upset me. Right? It's the same idea. So again, train yourself never, if you can. I mean, really, never is in your best interest. Train yourself to never blame. As soon as you see an upset, go to root cause inquiry. Now, what this person has to do is go potty. So I am going to play a song while I go potty, looking to see what song I want to play. All right, here's a song from Celtic Woman called Stay Awake. And as I play this song, Stay Awake, what that means for us right now is, don't fall into blaming. Blaming is sleeping, going back to sleep. Stay awake. Remember that when I'm upset, I have an opportunity to heal. I have an opportunity to see what's under this. Stay awake. Don't fall asleep. Don't fall back into blaming. So why don't y'all listen to this while I go potty.
Close your eyes. Stay awake. Don't close your eyes.
Okay, the song is over and I am back, but now, just now, Jamie decided that she wants to go outside, so hold on one second. Okay, we all remember Paul Harvey's, or maybe y'all don't. I shouldn't assume y'all remember. Probably many of you remember Paul Harvey's The Rest of the Story. I want to tell you the rest of the story about what happened with Laurent and this woman. You know, when I at first thought I was upset because they were talking about New Age stuff. And then I discovered that it was really the fear that the truth was not true. In that particular case, what happened when I discovered that I was really upset because I believed the truth is not true, I believed that very deeply. It was a very big fear for me. So then what happened was the fear came back again really, really strong. Only instead of being experienced as annoyance or hate, it was experienced as fear, because now it had been uncovered as a fear. And I ended up having to spend more time laying on the sofa. If you've heard me tell this story before, you know that I laid on the sofa with my tongue hanging out. That's the way I describe it, because the fear was so big and so all-consuming. But as I laid there on the sofa, resting, accepting, and trusting with the root cause in mind, now no longer believing a story, I was able to lay there now, trusting that this would pass, and that I would see truly. And that's exactly what happened in this particular case. That fear that the truth is not true, by the end of that experience, went away and has never come back. So when I saw that that was the cause of my upset, the fear became exposed, and then I practiced rest, accept, and trust with the fear. And then the fear left, and I've never felt that again. So sometimes getting to the root cause once and seeing it once, it will be healed. Once is all it takes. Other times, my experience with the I am bad belief or the unworthiness belief was that I saw it many times before it seemed to have no power anymore. Right? I talked about that last week, by the way. Last week I talked about the years, the years that it took me to let go of the I am bad belief and the different phases I went through and the different processes. So if you want to hear that, that's already posted on reginadonacres.com. I talked about that last week. But sometimes seeing something once is enough. And in fact, sometimes you might even see it and not even have to have the big fear come back up again. Like, don't think you have to have the big fear come back up again. You may just see it, and once you see the root cause, there may be so much light and so much clarity that it could disappear in a whisper. Just disappear in a whisper and never come back. There's all kinds of possibilities. One mistake that you would make is to believe that this process always works one way and it has to be that way. In fact, you could turn that into a guideline if you want to. Realize that the purpose of the process is to uncover the root cause. How the root cause is healed, there is no rule. That's the guideline. How the root cause is healed, dot, 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 there is no rule. But your job is to uncover the root cause. Right? It's reminding me of something that's in A Course in Miracles, although the exact words are not coming to me, but as I share the idea, if any of you know the exact words, feel free to type them in the room. But the idea is that my job is just to seek for the obstacles, right? It's the Holy Spirit's job to heal them. That's the idea. So my job in the root cause inquiry is to see the real reason that I am upset, right? and of course not to then give it 100% of my belief. But how the healing occurs, or the healing itself, is not my job. So maybe I'll have to look at the root cause many, many times before it vanishes. Maybe I'll look at it once, it will come up as a really big feeling, and as I rest, accept, and trust with it, it will be healed. Or maybe just when my eyes land on it, I go, oh, that's it. Maybe it will disappear in a whisper. Maybe something else. In effect, that's none of my business. My job is to find the root cause, the root belief, the real reason I'm upset, and then not give it 100% of my belief again, in whatever way is helpful. Again, that could be, oh, I see, that's why I was upset. I could admit my belief, yes, it is true, I believe that. And then I could say, but I am willing to be wrong. I am willing to see differently. I could move into Byron Katie's The Work and question it. I could use self-inquiry, who is the I that believes this thought? That doesn't matter. They're all helpful. What matters is that I'm not giving it 100% of my belief again. What matters is that it's not hidden, right? That's what matters. All right, Jamie wants back in. Another teaching that I often share that really is connected to this teaching is what I call the loop of experience. What I think, I see. What I see, I experience. What I experience, I think. And then that just continues, right? What I think, I see, and that means perceive. What I see, I experience. What I experience, I think. What I think, I then see. What I see, I then experience. What I then experience, I think about some more. So what I think, I see. What I see, I experience. Now the interesting thing about this loop that is directly related to this conversation is that what I think is often hidden from me. What I think is often hidden from me. And so, again, I'm continuing to think it, I'm continuing to perceive it, continuing to experience it, and continuing to think it because I don't even know I'm thinking it. And root cause inquiry helps me see that I'm thinking it. One of the places this showed up for me in my life was work. I was at work. At work, there was always this stress. You know, this stress because you needed to get the projects done on time. You needed to get the projects done well. The bosses needed to be pleased. And many people just accept that as natural. You know, that's natural. It's natural to want to get things done on time, to get things done well. In fact, people would say that's even good. You know, if you didn't want to get things done on time and didn't want to get things done well, something is wrong with you. So it's good that you have that. It's good that that's a part of your personality. You want to get things done on time. You want to get things done well. That's good. But actually, this is one of the first things that I practice root cause inquiry. I started practicing root cause inquiry on my stress at work. And this is one of the places that I found over and over and over again that I feared, you know, that I believed that I was the most unworthy scum on the planet. I mean, that's how I experienced it, that I was the most unworthy scum on the planet. Everybody else had some kind of education, some kind of talent. Everybody else deserved to be here, you know, here in this workplace at this level of job, right? Everybody else deserved to be here, but I somehow had faked my way up the path. I wasn't as good as everybody else, and at any moment, they were all going to find out. And so the reason I wanted to get my projects done on time and the reason I wanted to get my projects done well is because it was my mask. And that's why I felt a stress. You see, it wasn't really about just wanting to do my best. I had to do my best, or everyone else was going to discover that I was the lowest scum on the planet. And so what I didn't know is for years and years and years, right? My entire adult career, probably school as well, although I don't remember specifically, but certainly my entire adult career, when I was just telling myself I was just being responsible, I just wanted to do a good job, what was underneath that was that I feared I was the lowest scum on earth. And I was reinforcing it over and over and over again in a perfectly socially acceptable way by trying to be successful. So we have no idea what we're thinking if we aren't looking. Because the surface thought, the first level belief, I'm just trying to do a good job, is not true. So this is the purpose of root cause inquiry. What is it that I'm thinking? What is it that I'm putting through that loop again and again and again? What I think, I see, what I see, I experience, what I experience, I think. What is it that I'm conditioned to believe repeatedly and experience, perceive and experience repeatedly that I'm not even seeing because I don't know all of the stories that it's underneath? I wasn't going around consciously thinking, I'm the most unworthy scum on the planet. That was not a part of my conscious thought process. My conscious thought process was, I'm successful. I'm smart. I live in the right town. My daughter goes to the best school, right? But there was a stress with all of that. You know, that was all a lie to me, you know, because what was the truth to me was that I was the most unworthy scum on the planet. So this is the reason we have to do the root cause inquiry whenever there's an upset, even stress at work. Do not, you know, people will tell you stress at work is normal. That is not true. Stress at work means there's a hidden belief at work in my thinking. That's what stress means. In fact, if we go back and look at the Krishnamurti quote for the day, remember Krishnamurti said, achieve order within yourself, an inward tranquility which knows no disturbance at any moment in the daily life of the home and the office. You see? So Krishnamurti is not saying stress at work is normal. Krishnamurti is saying, you know, achieve order within yourself, an inward tranquility which knows no disturbance at any moment in the daily life of the home and the office. And again, the root cause inquiry is a way to find out what are the obstacles, what are the beliefs that are in the way of having this unshakable inward tranquility. So we really can't accept that it is normal to feel stress at work. We can't accept that it is normal for parents to worry about their children. You know, we can't accept that it's normal to feel great distress when our spouse dies. All of these things that most humans would say is normal, these are upsets. These are not an inward tranquility which knows no disturbance at any moment. And so every one of these are an opportunity to uncover a false belief that I have been believing again and again and again, and therefore it continues to be a part of my experience in a myriad of ways. All right, I said that what I would do during this 2 hours is that I would look at some upsets and use root cause inquiry live and look underneath them live. And so I'm ready to do that now. I think you guys get the gist of the process and you understand, you know, what's behind it, why we're doing it. So let me demonstrate it. Yesterday I had what appeared to be a very, very tiny upset. Not a big deal, lasted a few seconds, went away. But if I was to sit here now and tell you I know the cause of that little upset that lasted a few seconds and went away, I'd be lying. And because I don't know the cause of it, it can come back. And maybe next time it won't be little, Maybe next time it won't be short, right? Because there's something there. So why don't we go in and look at it together? It's easy to ignore the little ones that only last a few seconds. But you know, the little ones, the little upsets that only last a few seconds, there's still an opportunity to try this process out and find out what's there. Because something caused that little upset, even if it only lasted a few seconds, right? So let's discover what it was. Now what happened was I needed to mail some books to Canada. And my local post office doesn't have the customs form that you need in order to mail something out of the country. So I have to create the customs form here at home whenever I'm going to mail anything, and I have to take the customs form with me to the post office. So I have a little scale here that hooks up to my computer so I can weigh it. And then there's a certain page on the post office website where I can go to fill out the customs form. Now I've had the experience before that right in the middle after doing a lot of work, and by the way, there's a lot of work, a lot of questions you have to answer. It's not a minor amount of work. There's a lot of work you have to do to fill out this form online. And I've had the experience more than once when I get all the way to the end and I'm almost done, it locks up and I have to do it again. And yesterday, when I was filling out this customs form and I got right near the end of the process and I clicked the button, click the submit button or whatever it was, it started to look locked up. And I noticed a frustration. Now, the reason the upset passed quickly is I thought, maybe if I just reload this page, it'll be okay. And I reloaded the page and it was okay and I went on. So the problem seemed fixed and the upset went away. But I never went in and looked at the cause of the upset, right? So let's do that now. Let's do that right now, shall we? All right, just to let you know, I am setting up and closing my eyes, almost like I'm going into a meditation, because I'm going to be doing this with the heart. And so I'm getting myself in that position that allow that, you know, where I feel comfortable connecting with the heart. And I am closing my eyes, and I'm starting with some deep breaths. Okay, so why did I feel frustration? And the first answer that comes is because I had a lot to do. I didn't have a lot of time. And now the system seemed to be locking up on me again. I didn't want to have to start all over. I had a lot to do, and I didn't have a lot of time. Okay, well, that seems to be the story. That seems to be the first level of belief. The first level of belief is I had a lot to do, and I didn't have a lot of time. All right, so that's why I was upset. A lot to do, and I don't have a lot of time. Now, if the mind is perfectly healed, the fact that there's a lot to do and not a lot of time and a possible apparent obstacle here where some rework is going to have to be done, that's not upsetting to a perfectly healed mind. So I accept, I assume, that that is not the real reason I was upset. I accept that there's another reason I was upset that I am not aware of. And with that in mind, I ask, so why did that upset me? And the answer that is coming is that there was a fear that I was going to disappoint and anger others. The others, of course, being the ones who are waiting for the books and waiting for all of the other work that I have to do that I haven't gotten to yet. So there was a fear that I was going to disappoint and anger others. Now, again, I need to bring in the assumption that if I have a perfectly healed mind, that would not be upsetting to me, that others might be disappointed or angry. So I have to ask, why is that upsetting me? And the next answer that comes is there's a concern about what they think of me. With the assumption still in place that a healed mind would not be bothered by what they think of me, I ask again, why does that upset me? And what I still find within this little shred, there's still that thought that I'm not good enough. And now what I'm doing is just looking at it. As I explained to you all last week, I still see the I am bad thought, but it's not the firm, sticky belief that it is anymore. So I'm looking at that belief with my eyes, which I, you know, with my eyes closed, but looking at it with my eyes inwardly. And the experience I am having is that my eyes feel like light. And they're looking at that thought as if that thought is just a little scared child. And at the same time that I'm looking at that thought with my eyes, I feel my heart warming up with love. And I feel my heart embracing that thought. And there's just this feeling of awe, that again. It's okay, it's not true. And I feel done. And when I look back at the original thought that I was annoyed because the website was locking up, I had a lot to do and not a lot of time. You know, I see that that's not true. You know, I see that's not why I was upset. And I see it's perfectly okay to have a lot to do and not a lot of time, and that situation's going to come again. But it doesn't need to be a cause for upset, because it's not a true cause for upset, you know. I simply need to stay in the awareness that everything is perfect. When I get something done, that is perfect. And when I don't get something done, that is perfect. And I don't need to understand how it's perfect, right? I feel released from this. So again, the Krishnamurti quote today, achieve order within yourself, an inward tranquility which knows no disturbance at any moment in the daily life of the home and the office. Now, I'm not saying this thought is gone forever. How could I possibly know that? I'll know it's gone forever when forever passes and it never came back. But what I do know is I went and looked at it today, and today I feel free. I feel my entire body feels free and loving, and it feels like light. And of course, today is still a day with the apparent a lot to do and not a lot of time. In fact, you know, because the Choose Again retreat was last week, you know, there were just a lot of things that got put on the back burner, and now all those things are here, and my attitude towards those things right now is just one thing at a time. You know, just one thing at a time. I don't feel any stress about that. All right, so back to back, we're going to look at another one. I need to wait a second, because I'm a little high. I'm a little high. I can get high from the release of a false belief and an upset. I can feel a little high. And that's, you know, like high in love is how I feel. High in love. When something's really released, I just feel my heart like expands to the point that I'm completely within it. So I need to wait a second. I'm stretching. I do want to move into another upset. There is another one I'm aware of, but I need to kind of stretch this out of me and get ready for the next one. Okay, I'm ready. It didn't stretch the happiness out of me, though, just the highness that wouldn't have allowed me to feel another upset. Okay, the second upset. The other day I was contemplating Seven Steps to Awakening, quote number 777. Here, I have Seven Steps to Awakening right here. Let me open up to 777. I love that number. 777. I haven't finished contemplating it, by the way. I will be going back to it. I contemplated for the amount of time I had that morning, and then I did need to go to choose again. And since then, you know, I've had guests, and today's my first day without guests. So, you know, I'm here in Pal Talk this morning. So I just haven't had the time to go back to it yet, but I do know I'm going back to this quote and finishing it. I'm not done. But I did start it. Here's the quote that I was contemplating. Outward attachment arises through sensual objects, inward attachment through personality. Only he who, resting in the eternal, is free from passion, is able to give them up. So that this is the quote that I am currently contemplating. And I've had two things that I've written based on this quote. The first thing that I got when I contemplated this quote was just looking at what is an attachment. And of course, I saw that an attachment is something that I think I need. And basically, I think I need it in order to be happy, in order to feel safe, or in order to hold up the personality as me. You know, I could need it for any of those three reasons. I need it in order to feel happy, in order to feel safe, or in order to hold up the personality as me. And that's why it's an attachment. I also saw that when one is looking at their attachments, you need to engage the heart and not the mind. That if you ask the mind, what am I attached to? The mind will deceive you. The mind will tell you you're attached to things that you aren't attached to. And the reason the mind does that is to generate guilt. The mind will also tell you that you are not attached to things that you are attached to. And of course, that's to keep those true attachments hidden so that you can't be free of them. So you can't ask the mind, what am I attached to? It doesn't know. So when you're going to look at your attachments, what you need to do is you need to ask the heart. And so that for me was 777A, realizing again that an attachment is a belief that I need something for either my happiness, my safety, or in order to hold up my identification with the personality. And also that the mind is not going to be truthful with me about what my attachments are. I need to ask the heart. After that, I went into contemplation with the quote again. And you'll notice the first line of the quote says, outward attachment arises through sensual objects. In my second contemplation of this quote, I was asked to stop right there and only contemplate that part of the quote. Outward attachment arises through sensual objects. Well, sensual objects for me meant the five senses, smell, feel, taste, hear, see. And what I felt guided to do was to write down those senses and then ask the heart, what related to these senses am I attached to? And the first thing that I wrote down was smell. And when I asked the body, you know, related to the sense of smell, what is something I'm attached to? When I asked the heart, did I say ask the body? You'll see why in a moment if I said the body. It has to do with the body. When I asked the heart, what related to the sense of smell am I attached to? The heart told me, I am attached to having a clean body whenever I'm around other bodies. Now, I have already done the root inquiry on this one, so I can tell you what happened here, because I've already done this one. When I looked at this one, and I asked, you know, why do I want to have a clean body? Why would it upset me? That was the question. Why would it upset me if I did not have a clean body and I was around other bodies. And, you know, the answer came immediately, of course, afraid of judgment, afraid that nobody would want to be around me, afraid of being cut off from others. Afraid of being cut off from others. And of course, if you ask, you know, if you assume that the enlightened person doesn't mind being cut off from others, the enlightened person doesn't mind if everyone rejects him or her, and you know, the enlightened person can be perfectly happy, completely alone, I then have to ask, why would that bother me? And the answer came, you know, that that would be proof, again, that I was still that lowest scum on the earth. And again, the way I greet that thought now is with a smile. I say, ah, there it is again. And like I said last week, the difference for me between a belief and a thought is a belief is very, very heavy. Used to, if I would have seen that thought that I'm the lowest scum on the earth, it would have been very, very hard for me not to say it's true. You know, I had to trust Holy Spirit's teaching more than my own self, because my own self, my own belief, my own emotions, everything about me told me that it was true. So it was very, very hard. Now when I see that, I can just say, ah, that, there it is, that. And in this case, I literally gave my willingness that if a situation comes up where for some reason I cannot be clean, right now I don't feel any guilt guidance to force myself not to be clean around other people. I was telling David that he was here with me when I was contemplating. I said, guilt would say, now I can't take a shower. I have to be willing to be around other people, stinky, or I'm bad. But see, that's still the I'm bad thought. I don't feel that. You know, I feel, you know, perfectly fine taking my showers every day, but a situation may arise where for some reason I cannot be clean around other people. It could happen. And I am absolutely willing for that if it happens. And when it does, if that thought is there, if I feel that guilt, if I feel that unworthiness, I intend to just keep my eyes on it. My eyes, remember, are light. I'm not going to run and hide and try to avoid. I've already made this decision within myself. So you can tell I did not give the thought my belief. Now going back to my contemplation of the quote, once I wrote down smell, I wrote down feel. And I asked the heart, what has something to do with feeling that is an attachment for me? And the answer came, a comfortable body temperature. Not too hot when sleeping, and not too cold ever. You know, so if I am too hot while sleeping, that causes some level of upset, frustration is what I experience, frustration that it's too hot. And if I get really, really cold and I can't get warm, I experience, I'm going to call it resistance. Resistance, a judgment, like an unwillingness to accept this as okay. It is not okay to be cold. Now, I did do an inquiry on the cold part, and that's because an opportunity arose. Shortly, within a day or two after doing this contemplation, it got cold here in May, which it hasn't done since I've lived here, but it got cold here. And Jamie wanted to go outside. I can't use the word because she'll perk right up. But, you know, she wanted to go outside on a leash and move around the neighborhood. Here, I can type the word. She wanted to go for a... Right there. She wanted to do that. I can't even spell the word. She knows the spelling. But she wanted to do that. And it was cold and I didn't want to. And I noticed that resistance. I noticed that resistance. I really did not want to take her in the cold. And I had just done a, inquiry, which pointed out to me that, you know, I don't like to be cold, that I have an attachment to having a comfortable body temperature. So I knew to go ahead and inquire into that. And so I asked because what I felt was resistance. That was the feeling. That was the upset. That's the way I would label it. So what I asked was, why do I resist being cold? And the first answer that came is I like to be comfortable. Again, the first answer is the first level of belief, right? So the first level of belief is that I like to be comfortable. But I have to go with the assumption that if I had a perfectly healed mind, having a perfect body temperature all of the time, you know, if things got too hot or too cold, it would not upset me. So I have to ask again, why does not being comfortable upset me? And the next answer that came actually surprised me. And lots of times when you're doing this inquiry, honestly, you'll get to answers that surprise you because you're seeing hidden beliefs, right? So the next answer that came was, I want to resist not feeling comfortable. I really knew I was getting somewhere when I saw that. I want to resist. So the next question I asked was, why do I want to resist? And the answer that came was, that's a part of how I hold on to believing I'm this. This meaning this body, this person. That's a part of how I hold on to believing I'm this. Now, to be honest, that's not anything different than the contemplation said. It's just kind of getting at it from the other direction. But remember, when I was contemplating 777, we're looking at attachments. And remember, the first thing I was guided to do in 777A, my first contemplation of the quote, was ask, what is an attachment? And I saw that an attachment is feeling I need something. I need it for my happiness, for my safety, or in order to hold on to my identification. And that's exactly where I got with the root cause inquiry. So now I've seen that twice. I've seen twice. Because when I asked the heart, what am I attached to as regarding feeling, it said a comfortable body temperature. And then within a couple days, I have a frustration or a resistance arise. I have a resistance arise. I inquire into the resistance. And where do I get? The same place. Now, this is something a week ago I didn't know. A week ago, I could not have sat here and told you that the reason I like a comfortable body temperature, the reason I don't like to be too hot when I sleep, or the reason I don't like to be too cold ever, is because I'm trying to hold on to myself. Now, maybe at an intellectual level, you know, except I don't play the intellectual game, to be honest. But if I did play the intellectual game, I mean, I've certainly read stuff like that. So maybe at the intellectual level, if I was into, you know, just spouting out what I'd read somewhere, maybe I could have gotten to that. But I don't actually play the intellectual game, and since I don't, that wouldn't have happened with me. But a week ago, I was not aware of that. That's my point. When a week ago, when I got frustrated in the night because I got too hot and I kicked the blankets off and I couldn't sleep, I thought I just didn't like being too hot when I sleep. And when I didn't want to go out and be cold, be uncomfortable in the cold, I prefer to stay in when it's warm, I thought I just didn't like the cold. Now what I know, thanks to both contemplation and root cause inquiry, they worked together, I know that when I'm holding on to my resistance to the cold or my frustration with the heat at night, that what I'm really doing is holding on to my identity with this as myself. And what does that do for me to see the truth, the real root cause behind my resistance to cold? what I'm going to do now is, as that resistance starts to come up again, which I may not experience until next year, it's possible that won't happen again here. It's possible we're moving into summer now, and I don't have a resistance to heat, except when I'm sleeping. But during the day, I don't have a resistance to heat. So I may not feel that resistance to cold for many, many months, but when I do, and the next time, you know, Jamie wants to go out, and I think, oh, it's too cold, I don't want to go, now I'm not going to believe the story. I'm going to look at it and say, no, that's not it. That's not it. I want to hold on to the belief that I'm this. And you better believe, as soon as I see that, I'm going to say, come on, Jamie, let's go. Right? See, I'm not fooled anymore. Before, for my entire life up until this week, right? For my entire life up until this week, when it was too cold outside and I did not want to go, I just believed that. And you know what was happening? Underneath it, I was holding on to the belief that I want to be this. And so every time I believed I didn't want to be cold, I was really believing I want to hold on to this. I have to hold on to this. I need to hold on to this. And I was feeding that thought into the loop. What I think, I see, what I see, I experience, what I experience, I think. Every time I did not want to go into the cold, I was reinforcing the belief that I want to be the body personality self. And I had no idea. You see, that's how root cause inquiry works. And that's why I also said earlier, a lot of your root cause inquiry, literally a lot of it, is going to get down to the same belief, I'm bad, I'm unlovable, I'm the lowest scum on the earth. You're going to see that over and over. We just saw it happen to me around the post office website locking up, right? You're going to see that over and over. But if you let the ego tell you that's always the answer, that's always what you're going to get down to, there are other things that you also need to see that you aren't going to see. You need to realize you don't know why you're upset. If you think you're upset because you don't like the cold, or you think you're upset because they're talking about me, or you think you're upset because this website never works right, you don't know why you're upset. You don't, or else it would be evident. So you need to do the inquiry, realizing you don't know why you're upset, and you need to find the cause of your upset. Once you find the cause of your upset, it is exposed, and you can begin to subtract your belief from it. You know, next year when it's cold and she wants to go out and I say, I feel this resistance. I still feel the resistance, but now I know what the resistance is. The resistance is me trying to hold on to this as myself. Is that what I really want? Do I really want to hold on to the belief that this is me? No, I don't. I'm going to put on my coat and I'm going to go out. And if I put on my coat and go out, I'm not giving the belief my 100% of my belief. At all the times in the past, when I said, no, it's too cold, I don't want to go, I was reinforcing within myself the belief that I want to be the body, mind, personality. You see how tricky it is? So root cause inquiry is important, and allowing yourself to get to what the true root cause is, rather than believing it's always something like it's always the I am bad thought, is also important. Again, if you fall for the belief that it's always the I am bad thought, you will make yourself go in that direction. Or if you're coaching someone else, you will make them go in that direction. And that is not always what's underneath. It's what's underneath a lot of the time, but not always. So you got to be completely open, and you got to be willing to follow it down to the true root cause. Okay, I'm thirsty, and I need to run upstairs and fill up my cup. So I'm going to play another song, a short song, a lovely song, that would just give me enough time to go upstairs and get some water. This is from Donovan. It's from the movie Brother, Sun, Sister, Moon, one of my very, very favorite movies, and it's called Island of Circles.
Birds are singing, sweet and low, from the trees that gently grow by the silver river's flow on this lovely day. To the meadow there go I, to wander as the butterfly. How the flowers please my eye on this lovely day. I wish it could be always. Life is easy on such a day. I wish this peace on everyone on this lovely day. Life is easy on such a day. I wish this peace on everyone on this lovely day.
Okay, lovely. Love that song. It's a wonderful song. All right. Linda's asking, what's wrong with accepting who I am? Do you mean the body personality? Is that what you mean by who I am? Oh, the cold. Well, I mean, I'm going to, when I go outside and it's cold, depending on how cold it is, I will dress appropriately. So the colder it gets, the more layers I will have on, the more I will be covered up. But if there is not absolute peace, it means I'm hiding a false belief from myself. And so, you know, there's nothing wrong in that you're bad if you hide a false belief. But if you hide a false belief, it remains there and it will lead to other upsets as well. It's not upsetting you in just that one situation, such as the cold. It's also the cause of other upsets as well. So probably what's going to happen, and of course I don't know the future for sure, but you know, if I give my willingness, which I'm doing right this second, if I give my willingness to see the other upsets that come from me trying to hold on to the belief that I am this body, this personality, I'm going to start seeing those. That belief that I want to hold on to this, that belief is under other upsets as well. And as long as I keep that belief intact, that I want to hold on to this as what I am, I'm not going to have perfect peace, right? So, you know, like yesterday when I had the very brief, very mild upset about the website not working. And again, it appeared to go away because I just reloaded the page and then it worked, right? You know, it is so easy to ignore those kinds of things. It was 5 seconds, an upset that lasted 5 seconds. It wasn't a big deal. I fixed the situation. I can move on. But you see, the more we do that, the more we hold on to the false belief that was under the upset. The more we question every single upset that comes, the more we use root cause inquiry with every upset that comes, if you know, the faster we're actually going to heal. In fact, I would say that is the primary reason people do not heal, is they believe they are upset because. I'm upset because you talked bad about me. I'm upset because you said rude things to me. I'm upset because my children are drug addicts and I didn't want them to be. I'm upset because my husband is having an affair. I'm upset because my poor little doggy got hurt. I'm upset because, you know, because. And, you know, everybody else will tell you, yep, those are valid reasons for being upset, and we believe it. And we don't look. We don't look to see why we're really upset. And so the hidden beliefs are alive and strong. Right? The hidden beliefs are alive and strong. The way the hidden beliefs get weakened is by bringing them out of hiding, by looking at them. And then again, once you look at them, what you do is up to you. You may say, oh, I see that. I realize I really, really believe that, but I'm willing not to. You might use Byron Katie's The Work on that belief and question it. You might say, who is the I that believes this? Use self-inquiry to question it. You might do something else I'm not sitting here thinking of right now. But as long as you don't give it 100% of your belief when you see it, you're setting yourself free. Only believing keeps it in place, and hiding keeps it believed. Only believing keeps it in place, 100% believing, and hiding keeps it believed. And every time you're upset, it's because of a false belief. Every time. There's not a single solitary situation in the world that would be upsetting to you if your mind was perfectly healed. That's an assumption going into this. Now what I'm going to do is go back to this inquiry that I did, or this contemplation that I did on number 777, and see if there's something else here that I have not yet done the root cause inquiry on. Now again, I do the root cause inquiry pretty quickly and pretty automatically. So, you know, even these new things, I may have already inquired into them, but maybe not. Maybe there's one here I haven't. So let's look. So the smell, you know, when I said, what am I attached to regarding smell? It was the clean body, right? And we saw that was related to still that thought, I'm the lowest scum on the planet. When I asked, what am I attached to regarding feeling? It was a comfortable body temperature. And I saw that, you know, that resistance that I feel when I'm cold, that is related to me wanting to hold on to the belief that I am this body personality. That's really important to see. I'm glad I saw it a week ago. I didn't know that. And trust me, I'm going to treat cold differently from now on. I have no desire to continue to reinforce that belief. Okay. Now taste. I asked, what am I attached to regarding taste? And remember again, I asked the heart. And the heart said, nothing. And it's funny because the mind would have told me chocolate. The mind would have said, oh, you're attached to chocolate. But the heart said, that's not true. The heart or the intuition said, if there was no chocolate, you would easily accept that. You would just say, okay, I don't eat chocolate. So that's not really an attachment. You like chocolate, but you wouldn't get upset if it wasn't available. So see, the heart knows better than the mind. So then I asked for hearing. What am I attached to regarding hearing? And there was literally nothing. The heart said that if I lost my hearing, if I became deaf, I would be fine. That would not be upsetting for me. So then I asked, what about seeing? And the heart said, if I lost my sight, that would be upsetting to me. I do have attachments. And it told me that I'm attached to the beauty of the world. And I'm attached to the beauty of my daughter's face. And that I can feel that. I feel sad. I can feel the truth of that. If I became blind and I could not look out on the mountains, could not look out at the flowers, out at the birds, out at the sky, right? I would miss that. And I can also feel that if I could not ever look at my daughter's face again, I would miss that. So I'm feeling right now I should pick one, and the one I feel to pick is my daughter's face. So we're going to find out why the idea of not ever seeing my daughter's face again makes me sad, all right? So, why does this idea make me sad? And the first answer that comes is, I love my daughter's face. Now remember, the first answer that comes is the first level of false belief. It's not the truth. I have to go with the assumption that if I had a perfectly healed mind and my sight went away, that I would be able to be perfectly happy, never seeing my daughter's face again. And I accept that. So the next question then becomes, why would this upset me? If I could never see it again, why would this upset me? And when I look within, the only thing that is coming right now is the word loss. There's a sense of loss, a sense of something being taken away. Now again, I have to hold on to the assumption that if I had a perfectly healed mind, it could be lost. It could be taken away, and that would not result in an upset. So I have to ask, why does this idea of loss upset me? And the next answer that comes is because I am not whole. I'm just being with that answer a little longer to see what that means. I am not whole. And the sense that I am getting as I'm sitting with the answer, I am not whole, is the sense that I am somehow carved out of reality. The sense that if you take from the skin down, that is what I am. And I am nothing but that. And that by itself is not everything. There are other things that are a part of everything. And I'm not whole if I'm not able to either be or experience everything. I'm not whole. All right, so I'm going to go with the assumption that if I had a perfectly healed mind, I could be deaf, blind, completely alone, have no experience of the outside at all, and I would be perfectly happy. I need to bring that into this inquiry in order to go deeper. Because I am not whole means I'm not able to connect with what's outside. That's what it really means here. And so I need to go with the assumption that if I had a perfectly healed mind, not being able to connect with the outside would not cause a disturbance. And so I need to ask again, why does this sense that I am not whole? Why does this sense that I am not whole. Upset me. And the answer that is coming up is lonely. Lonely. If I can't connect with the outside, I will be lonely. Now again, lonely is a specific descriptor. It is a perception. It is a perception of being alone. Lonely is a perception that being alone has to be unhappy. And that is not true. I trust, again, with a perfectly healed mind, I could be completely alone, deaf, dumb, and alone in a cave. Blind, deaf, dumb, blind, the whole bit, alone in a cave, and be perfectly happy. So I need to ask, I'm looking at the word lonely, and the question that's coming up for me, the best way to continue is, why lonely? Like, why not just alone? Why lonely? Why lonely? Why is the perception lonely? And I'm getting no connection. So I need to ask, why no connection? Why is that the perception? Why is that what's coming up? And the answer that came is, there is a belief that beingness by itself is not enough. Now that I feel all over me. There is a belief that beingness by itself is not enough. And many of you probably have seen this belief. If there are not things to do, if there are not people to be with, right? Then I can't be happy. I need something to do. I need people to be with, right? Beingness by, we have a belief that beingness by itself will not make us happy. Beingness by itself is not enough. That's an important belief to look at. And, you know, my mind wants to say, oh, I don't believe that. But I feel like being more honest than that. And so I think what I'm going to do with that, again, what you do when you get down to your false belief is up to you. What feels right for you. And what I really feel I need to do with that is that I need to make sure that whenever there is a time of doing nothing that arises in my life, I need to make sure I'm not turning on the TV or turning on the iPad or finding something to fill the time. I need to trust that the universe will bring me the opportunities to just be and do nothing else. And when those opportunities come, I need to make sure I'm embracing them. Because only through being alone will I fully embrace and realize that being alone is enough, that it is whole. If every time an opportunity to just be comes, if I fill it by turning on the TV, grabbing the iPad, I'm still going to have this false belief. Remember, it's a false belief. I'm still going to have this false belief underneath that being alone isn't enough. And again, I don't want to hold on to any false beliefs. Any false belief is going to lead to an upset. But for me, it's more important than that. I want the truth. I want the truth I want to know the truth, be the truth, is the truth, only truth. And I won't get there if I hold on to false beliefs. So I'm making a commitment to myself right now that I'm going to be alert to when the universe is giving me an opportunity just to be, whether it's 5 minutes, 30 minutes, 5 hours, and I am not going to fill it with stuff. And that's it. My time is up. I am releasing the mic for Christopher.